Welcome to Women Got Game, where we uncover untold stories of extraordinary women in sports across Northwest Ohio and beyond. I'm Sophia Fisher, and we're going to celebrate the evolution of female athletes, coaches, and sports enthusiasts. Let's dive into a world often overlooked in the broader sports narrative. Ready to explore? Let's play. On this episode of Women Got Game, we explore women in sport and the history, or her story, as we like to say, exploring how women were introduced to sports through physical education. We'll provide a snapshot of history from the 1800s into the 1970s, when Title IX emerged. The introduction of physical education is really marked by changing societal attitudes, evolving educational philosophies, and efforts to address gender roles, inevitably influencing the emergence of women in sport. So, I thought it'd be nice to revisit how many of us, the competitive female out there, got introduced to physical activity. For many of us, it may have started at home with older siblings, playing with our friends at recess or on the playgrounds, the YWCA, a church league, or even organized sports. But when and where do girls get their first exposure to physical movement and sports? For a lot of us, it was in physical education class. Some of us loved it. We couldn't wait for PE class, while others awkwardly stood in the corner just waiting for the bell to ring. Or some would have that reoccurring stomach ache, so you could sit out and watch your classmates play. For me, I couldn't wait. My most memorable PE teacher was in kindergarten. Her name was Mrs. B, short for Mrs. Beasley. She was a tough coach, if you will, small in stature, competitive and mighty, and loved using her whistle to maintain our sometimes unruly behavior. I learned to listen and practice techniques and stop and go on command with the blow of a whistle. And if you got out of line, she wouldn't mind tapping you on the head to get you straightened out. But more importantly, I had a great time and she encouraged me to play sports. But before we revisit some notable milestones and achievements in women's sports history and how it intersects with physical education, I'd like to introduce our guest today, Dr. Celia Regenbaugh. Celia finished her undergraduate and master's degree at the University of Florida. They were both in physical education. She taught elementary PE in Florida and then went to University of Northern Colorado to work on her doctorate in physical education. Before she finished her doctorate, she taught physical education and outdoor education to grades K through 6 at the University of Wyoming Laboratory School. And then in 1986, she started teaching at the University of Toledo College of Education Department. Celia is now enjoying retirement as a former associate professor emeritus. And most importantly, she's an avid University of Toledo women's basketball fan for over 35 years. And personally, I had the pleasure of being one of her students at the University of Toledo, where I received my Master's of Sport, Recreation, and Leisure Studies. Welcome, Celia.
Hey there.
It's great to have you today. What do you remember about playing, Celia?
I was an adventurous child, and I think I gave my parents lots of breath-holding moments and most of their gray hair. I remember playing games in the backyard with my family. My dad was usually the winner. However, I think I often was a close second. There was always lots of laughter and fun. There were also usually neighborhood kids available for a bike ride or any assortment of games. School presented the opportunity to play games we didn't play at home because we didn't have the equipment or the people it took to make a team. I remember high school basketball and the changes that took place. Much different game today.
So why did you become a physical educator?
Oh, that's quite the story. I was playing volleyball in high school, and my team lost an important game because a person on my team ducked just before hitting the winning return because she was afraid that the ball would hit her. I decided to become a PE teacher, and I would teach kids not to be afraid of the ball.
This is a good lesson to learn, that's for sure. So what influence do you think the physical educator has on children's participation in sport?
A good physical education teacher will focus on teaching children the basic fundamentals of movement and sport skills, the development of space awareness, and an understanding of how to move effectively and efficiently, and encourage students to develop their movement creativity, important in sports and gameplay. Then direct the creative moves to how to correctly throw and catch, strike and kick an object, and help them understand and develop strategies for playing games. As they age, it will be important to understand cooperation and competition, learn rules of games, and encourage them to continue making up their own games and rules.
Now, let's transition and let's talk about some key milestones in the history of women's inclusion in physical education and sport. For example, what were the societal attitudes towards women's participation in physical activities during 1800s into the, you know, early 19th century?
During the 1800s and into the 19th century, societal attitudes towards women's participation in physical activities were influenced by prevailing cultural norms, social expectations, and ideas about gender roles, separate spheres, which dictated distinct roles for men and women. Women were largely expected to focus on domestic responsibilities, while men were associated with the public sphere, including physical activities and sport. Concerns about femininity, medical views on women's health, participation could hurt women's health, fashion constraints, reform movements, etc., all had an impact. In fact, the first women's intercollegiate competition among women was a scheduled tennis tournament between Bryn Mawr and Vassar in 1892. It was canceled because Vassar faculty did not allow their women teams to compete in intercollegiate events.
That's something. So who were some influential figures in the 19th century advocating for women's physical education, and what were their contributions?
The 19th century witnessed the emergence of educational reform movements. For example, Catherine Beecher, an American educator and advocate for women's education, promoted the inclusion of physical education for women. Beecher's work contributed to the idea that physical education should be a part of a well-rounded education for women. Notably, the emergence of women's colleges also occurred around this era. Competitive events for college women increased. However, there was a philosophical conflict among college women physical educators, which related to the participation of women in sport and which contributed to the lack of support for women's varsity athletics, which lasted well into the 40s.
Wow. It's also my understanding that tennis was introduced to the United States by Mary Ewing Outerbridge in 1874. And then I think in the 1876, there was the first women's boxing match held in the United States, where Nell Saunders defeated Rose Harland, and her prize was a silver butter dish.
Oh, my. Rewards for winning have definitely changed over the years. Now it's silver trophies, bigger than a butter dish, and championship rings.
Yeah, I've seen some of those championship rings, and they're pretty massive, and they got a lot of jewels and a lot of a lot of bling. So, but they're really, really cool to have. And up close in person, if you've ever seen one, they're pretty cool. So let's talk about how women's suffrage, if you will, and the suffrage movements in the late 19th and early 20th centuries and the impact, the recognition of women's rights, you know, kind of including access to physical education, you know, what did that look like?
In the late 19th and the early 20th century, women's suffrage movements were gaining momentum. Women's rights activists argued for broader educational opportunities, including physical education, as part of the broader push for gender equality.
So things were starting to move. A lot happened in the 1900s, such as the 1900 Summer Olympics in Paris. I think that was definitely instrumental, and it introduces a lot of women's events. It was golf, tennis, croquet.
Yes, and another fun fact is that in 1914, the rules for women's basketball in the United States were altered to permit half-court play. There were three shooters in the forward court with three guards. It's fun to read the NC2A rules changes that happened over the years in women's basketball.
Yeah, 100%. And so I can imagine that physical education instructors had to stay up to date on the rule changes.
You're right. I remember when I was teaching, I always looked forward to the information that came out from NAGWS, so the NAGWS, the National Girls and Women in Sports Professional Organization. Also, the YMCA had a huge impact with meetings and getting people together to talk about rules. And professional meetings were always important to go to learn about what was happening in sport and physical education.
So in what ways did the roles of women change during World Wars I and II? Let's talk about that. And how did this affect perceptions of women's capabilities within physical activities?
During World Wars I and II, the roles of women expanded as they took on various responsibilities in the home front. The increased recognition of women's physical capabilities during wartime contributed to changing attitudes towards women's roles in physical education and sport. We all remember Rosie the Riveter. For example, in 1917, women's association football, I think we would call it soccer here, became popular on a large scale in the United Kingdom during the First World War, when employment in heavy industry spurred the growth of the game, much as it had done for men 50 years earlier.
So what were the key developments, would you say, in women's physical education in the post-World War II era?
The post-World War II era saw a gradual shift in educational policies towards greater inclusivity. More opportunities for women in education, including physical education, began to emerge.
Oh, yeah. I remember the movie A League of Their Own. It was a film that was like, there's no crying in baseball. And the so-called Lipstick League, which was actually a true story based from, I think it was 1943, and taken from the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. And that was to maintain baseball in the public eye where the majority of the men were away at war. And then, unfortunately, in 1954, the league folded. But that was an awesome movie.
I remember another fun fact. In 1931, women were banned from playing professional baseball by Judge Kennesaw Mountain Landis. He was the commissioner of baseball. Landis was upset that a girl, 17-year-old Jackie Mitchell, had struck out both, are you ready for this, Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig during exhibition play.
That's incredible. Well, as we move forward, we're looking at the 1950s and 1960s. Timeline. They were pivotal decades for women in sports. It was really marked by the significant milestones and events that, you know, really contributed to women's athletic achievements. So there was a lot of people, I think U.S. Women's Golf Open came about, and that's when, I want to say, Babe Dickerson Zacharias, if I'm saying her name right, I think she won the first Open for golf. And then I think in 1961, Wilma Rudolph, who was very famous, becomes the first American woman to win three gold medals in track and field at the Rome Olympics. But really, what sports were being taught in PE classes during this time frame, Celia?
During the 1950s and 60s, physical education classes typically included a range of sports and activities. The specific sports taught could vary based on factors such as regional preferences, available facilities, and educational philosophies. Common activities included basketball, volleyball, gymnastics, track and field, softball, baseball, and maybe tennis. Physical fitness tests became important, and physical fitness testing became more standardized during this period, including exercises like sit-ups, push-ups, and endurance runs. Maybe that was a quarter mile around the track.
I think so. I remember that. Those are always kind of your physical fitness testing. I remember it was a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
When we were little and then into, you know, high school too. I remember also climbing those ropes.
Oh, yeah.
And then you had this, it looked like a web. It was a netting that you would climb.
Cargo nets.
Yes. So all of those things, I thought they were really interesting. I really looked forward to them. And then, but others, it was pretty traumatizing for some people. But let's move forward let's move and groove, if you will, into the 1970s. I couldn't help but look at what music was popular at that time, and disco was emerging in women's sports. And I said women's sports were staying alive. Couldn't help myself. And that's the Bee Gees. And then I started laughing about Donna Summer. My sister, who's older than me, she used to listen to Donna Summer and 16 years old, and she loved to be the dancing queen. So I think we should have a throwback theme night at a collegiate game for women's basketball or any other women's sport. It'd be super fun. And okay, sorry, that was my 70s, but I think it'd be really great in the realm of sport. And as we move into Title IX, it's interesting to see where we were at as a culture and what was going on around us. And that Title IX amendment, to me, was very pivotal. It was in 1972 when it was put into a federal law. So I'd like to ask you, Celia, how did Title IX, which is enacted again in 1972, contribute to the advancement, if you will, in women in sports and physical education?
The passage of Title IX in the United States in 1972 was a landmark movement and moment. Title IX prohibits sex-based discrimination in federally funded educational programs, including sports, not just sports. While Title IX applies broadly to educational programs, it has had a profound impact on women's participation in sports, particularly at the collegiate level. The implementation of Title IX resulted in increased opportunities for female athletes by addressing gender-based discrimination in educational institutions, including sports programs. And up to this time, there were few, if any, teams in high schools, so the impact was felt amongst all children in education.
Yeah, I don't think many people know that. And I guess, so let's talk about a few other notable events that happened in the 70s. I know in 1971, the rules of women's basketball, as we referenced earlier, it had changed before, it changed once again in the United States, were changed to have 5 players per team, using a full court finally, and a 30-second shot clock was also implemented.
Yeah, I think we were finally allowed to sweat.
Up and down the court. And it's interesting here. So once again, I really trying to correlate it and really tie, you know, history of women's sports and how PE programs impacted that. How did you know how to stay updated on changes? I mean, did the sports, what was happening, the rules of the game? And then how was that reflected in how did you teach it in class? I mean, was that a challenge for you to do so? Or what was going on at that time to help keep you current?
I belong to my state and national physical education association, AFERT, the American Association of Health, Physical Education, Recreation, and Dance. And I attended state and national meetings. While there, I attended presentations related to new games. I was introduced to many opinions, and even I made a few presentations at the national and state level. I think conversations with other professionals are critical to continued professional development, and I would encourage people in all walks of life to be a member of their professional organization and go to meetings to learn what's on the horizon or the philosophies that are current.
Before we end this podcast, I have to ask you, how do you think PE has evolved in the 21st century, and what challenges still exist?
Well, PE classes today often include a diverse range of activities to cater to different interests and fitness levels, and we know that that's changed immensely over the years. These can include traditional sports like soccer, basketball, and volleyball, as well as non-traditional activities like yoga, dance, or martial arts. I think another change is the focus on health and wellness. Many physical education programs incorporate elements of health and wellness education. This includes discussions on nutrition, mental health, and the overall benefits of an active lifestyle. Teachers incorporate technology, fitness trackers, and apps to monitor physical activity levels, help set and meet goals, and provide feedback to students. I just wonder, what will AI bring to schools?
Absolutely. It's fascinating as we look towards the future. Celia, it's been great to have you as our guest today.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, Celia, you got game. Before we wrap up today's episode, let's remember that the history of women in physical education is a testament to progress, showcasing achievements that have laid the foundation for females to gain exposure to sport and competition from K-12 programs. It's also important to note that the landscape of education, including physical education, can evolve over time. Practices may continue to adapt to changing educational philosophies, societal trends, and technological advancements. Special thanks to my executive producer, Chris Pfeiffer. I'm your host and producer, Sophia Fisher. Please feel free to visit us at wgte.org/womengotgame.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.